I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, my guests discuss the impact of Hurricane Irma on Athens, the state, and the Southeast, as well as what residents can do to prepare for storms and disasters and how they react in those situations. Those topics and more next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. My guests today are all professors from the University of Georgia: Jeffrey Dorfman from the College of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences, Kim Coder with the Warnell School of Forestry, and Alan Stewart with the College of Education. So thank you all for joining me. And I'm just going to start with you, Professor Coder, if you just tell me a little bit about yourself.
I am a professor of tree biology and healthcare. I work with utilities, municipals, and commercial folks dealing with tree care, both the biomechanics, the biology, the health, and work with arborists around the state trying to keep trees healthy.
And we'll move on to you, Professor Dorfman.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey Dorfman. I'm a professor of economics in the College of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics. And so I've focused on things like the hurricane, other weather-related things, on what damage it does to the agricultural economy. And in general, also I'm happy to talk about sort of what it does to the economy overall.
And we'll have you, Professor Stewart.
Yes, I'm Alan Stewart from the College of Education. I am a weather and climate psychologist. I have training in both of those fields, and the focus of my research on the basic end has to do with how people perceive and notice various sorts and types of weather. On the applied end, I'm interested in weather-related risk-taking, on the effect of weather on mood, on fear of storms, and several years ago we completed a project where we tried to infuse the American Red Cross Master of Disaster Weather Science and Safety curriculum into several Georgia school systems in the K through 8 grades.
Right now we are still cleaning up in Athens and throughout the state. So I'm going to start with you, Professor Coder, and tell us a little bit about the damage here in Athens and in our area. I know that I spoke with County Manager Blaine Williams, and he said hundreds of trees were down during Irma. What are you hearing about the damage in the community?
Well, we had three general types. As we move north in and through Georgia, we progressively lost fewer and fewer trees, but that still amounted to thousands and thousands of trees. Absolutely knocked down, broken, twisted, or uprooted. In this area, we had a number of tops out, a few trees down, and a lot of major branches. We got the 50 to 60 mile an hour gusts, and the gust and the calms really tear up those trees. We've also had the roots damage on a few, and so you'll see them leaning, and they will progressively lean until they fail. We also now have a problem with people having the obvious things removed. Now they're going to see some things that aren't so obvious come down over the next season.
All right, so the storm has already weakened some of those trees to the point where we're going to see more toppling the next kind of—
The toppling, probably not, but a lot of stem breakage and stem snapping, because this is a gift that will keep on giving, this hurricane. It's going to continue to, it's already broken a number of trees, and now a couple storms, just light storms, or any ice storms that we get in the winter will pull down a lot more biomass.
Professor Dorfman, we are also obviously having some economic damage because of the hurricane. Can you speak to some of that? And I know there have been crop losses. Some crops seem like they're going to be okay, but for some people, it's just done.
Sure. We had losses in two general categories. For agriculture, we had crop losses in Georgia, mostly in cotton and pecans. We lost probably about 20% of the cotton crop, and about 30% of the pecans just got literally blown off the trees. Florida had worse losses. They may have lost half of the orange crop, which, if you like drinking orange juice in the breakfast, those are made out, that's made out of Florida oranges. So the price of orange juice is going up. They lost a lot of sugar cane. They lost a lot of vegetables. So we're going to have trouble getting strawberries and some vegetables for the next month or two until they can replant and grow a new crop. So that's agriculture. And agriculture in Georgia probably lost about $250 million worth of production. Then there was just the general loss to the economy because for anywhere from 2 days to a week, everybody was at home. And the fact that we just all sat in our houses for a couple of days means we weren't at work, we weren't producing something. The hotel industry did really well that week, but nobody else did. And that's probably going to cost Georgia somewhere around $10 to $12 billion, and the Southeast probably somewhere around $40 billion. Florida lost probably about twice or a little more than twice what Georgia lost. And, you know, there's a little bit in South Carolina, a little bit in Alabama, if we want to count East Texas, where Hurricane Harvey was, as part of the Southeast, which, you know, sort of ambiguous whether they count that way or not. But if we threw them in there, we'd probably be getting close to $50 billion sort of Southeast-wide from the two hurricanes.
Let me speak with you, Professor Stewart, regarding people in this process. You know, we had Hurricane Harvey. Do you think with Harvey hitting and being so devastating in Texas, that impacted how people reacted regarding Irma?
Yes, I think it probably did. Interestingly enough, I think the preparations that were done for Harvey in Houston were had sort of the same effect that the effect of Hurricane Rita in 2005 had, also for Houston after Hurricane Katrina made landfall in New Orleans also in 2005. 2005 was a really bad year for hurricanes, and it looks like we're on track to have a similarly severe season this year. The forecasts for Irma were really good forecasts. The storm moved a little bit to the left of the forecast track as it approached Florida and Georgia. And I think there was enough time for people to prepare. And after the onset of Harvey, it looked like it was just one of these years where the long-term forecast for the number of named storms and the landfalling storms was really going to verify this year. And so I think that probably had an effect of solidifying people's preparation responses and trying to do what they could ahead of the storm, knowing that our region experiences hurricane season from basically June through the first part of November each year, some years worse than others. But this year, I think, is one of those years where we're going to feel the brunt of nature's fury.
You know, you mentioned Hurricane Katrina, and to me, that was like the storm of storms. It seems like everything else, I mean, you judge everything by Katrina. Because people were stuck, we watched it unfold, they were stuck in the floods. How do you think that storm impacts people? It seems like we're more likely to evacuate now after seeing something like that.
Certainly, I think that's the case. The images of people being trapped in the Superdome in New Orleans after Katrina, really nowhere else to go. That was one of the highest places people could go to get away from the floodwater. I think those images are burnished in memory, and it's not been that long ago. And certainly, if anything, the storms are every bit as severe. The unrelenting rain of Harvey in Houston and eastern Texas, western Louisiana certainly was a testament to the amount or the rate at which you can lose a place to be because the floodwaters come up so quickly. And I think one thing from the psychological literature that we know is that when people are exposed or have some experience with severe or extreme weather, personally especially, close psychological distance to something that nature hands us in the way of a storm, they are much more likely in the aftermath of that to prepare and respond. And certainly with the multimedia channels reporting on the storms, even if you're not there, you can certainly get the next best thing, which is a very large dose of the coverage, the images, the sounds, the interviews with the survivors and so forth that really brings home the significance of the severity of the weather.
Those images also often show reporters in the heart of the storm, it seems like, nearly being blown away. Does it make people less concerned?
That has been a controversial issue for at least 10 years, since the time of Katrina, or longer, where, you know, it's no secret that the media, the reporting of information is a business. We have dedicated news and weather channels for that, and people want to know. And if one media outlet doesn't cover or send a reporter into the eye of the storm, so to speak, another competitor will. So it's sort of a race to the bottom, if you will, in terms of being able to provide information on the story. But the flip side of that is seeing images and hearing a first-person account, sometimes live, of what the storm is like. It is a learning opportunity for everyone who sees that. One reporter, for instance, tied themselves to the railing and stepped out into the around the corner of a building and was facing the brunt of the winds. And, you know, certainly it's interesting to see what the wind can do, and it's just awesome, amazing amount of force. But at the same time, people are learning from it. We know from social cognitive, social learning theory, some things you don't learn by trial and error, you watch others do it. And so the kind of the debate or the discourse on this is, while the reporting is great, it's also maybe not modeling the best behavior.
Right. It's a little touchy subject for me because I used to work in television. We were always in the wrong place, really, because you're going to the source of the trouble. But it's not an option not to go.
Exactly. If you don't go, someone else will, and then they'll be saying they were the only one who brought you the live reporting from the heart of the storm.
And you're not giving somebody an exclusive.
Exactly.
Sometimes you think about it. It's fairly ridiculous when you see some of the images, like you shouldn't have to be tethered or have someone hold you down so you won't blow away in a storm.
Well, the big thing about hurricanes over a wide area in an urban area, if piece of roofing blows off, sheet metal from something, it's going very fast. And if it hits a person, you know, it could be a very bad situation for them.
Just for the record, I never did that. I went after the storm to see the cleanup and the damage. I was not in the storms. But Professor Dorfman, tell me a little bit about the fact that some things are just gone. Some of the losses can't be made up. Some people are just going to have to eat the losses after these sort of disasters.
Sure. So, I mean, the lost productivity, the lost output from that week is gone. And I suppose some businesses may try and put weekend shifts or double shifts to get it back. But for the most part, they're gone. And then, for example, the pecan trees that were lost, not pecans. If pecans blow off, you lost them once. But if your pecan tree came down in the storm, then that's a loss that's going to hurt for 15 or 20 years, because it takes a long time for a pecan tree to grow up.
I know we can't avoid storms, we can't avoid disasters, but it's quite a penalty later to recover.
It is. For a lot of people, it's over when it's over. But for other people, people with broken pecan trees, with damage to their place of business, with damage to the infrastructure that supported their business. You know, if you use the road or an airport that's damaged and isn't going to be fixed for months, for example, people in the hospitality industry in the Florida Keys, we don't know when people are going to be able to go back to the Keys. But it isn't going to be anytime soon. So they're losing potentially half a year worth of business, plus having to pay all the costs of repairing all the damage they underwent. And in some of those cases, you wonder, do you ever fully recover? Or do people just decide the Keys isn't the place they want to go anymore?
Right. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
So are those losses insurmountable for some people?
Some are. I think the damage that Puerto Rico just took from Hurricane Maria is, in many cases, insurmountable. I would predict a large percentage of the population of Puerto Rico is going to move to the mainland United States and never go back.
I don't know how you recover from something like that, from Maria. You know, I never heard of 100% of the power being out. It just seems like that's a rare occurrence. But they're suffering way more than power outages, as difficult as that is to deal with.
Their power system is down. Their water system is down. Their sewage system is down. Some people's houses are destroyed. The food, all the food production on the island is gone. They got a lot of, plantain trees are gone. Crops, they literally had crops blown out of the ground. The plants are just completely gone. They're not broken. They're not drowned. They're missing. They're somewhere else. They got a lot of their imported food from other Caribbean islands that also suffered damage in the hurricane. So they're going to have to create a whole new supply chain to provide them food from different places than they ever got it before. It's going to be a series of very difficult problems to tackle.
I mean, this is something that at least years to fully recover.
Yes, at least years to fully recover, if ever.
And you said if they fully recover, because I assume, as you did, that people will leave. You know, it's not worth it to stay and try to rebuild if they have a place they can come, like the mainland.
Sure. People need to remember Puerto Rico is part of the United States. It's not a state, but they're all citizens. They don't need to worry about immigration. They don't need to wait for a work permit or green card. They can get on a plane and come here anytime they want. They almost all have relatives that are already here. And there's somewhere between 2,000 and 10,000 people a day flying to the U.S. from Puerto Rico right now. And that's only that low because there's a lot of damage to the airport and they can't get more flights right now.
Yeah, that's a devastation on a level that not too many people see, fortunately. But it seems incomprehensible how they are living with that damage.
And you get into cultural things, too. People do, for example, care quite a bit about trees. And I'm not sure there's a tree left on Puerto Rico right now. That is disconcerting to people.
Right.
To have the landscape changed physically, the way it looks visibly to you.
And the landscape that they had cannot be replaced for three generations. So their children are not going to see what their parents grew up with because of this storm. The national forest, the rainforest there, been devastated. And with the infrastructure tree interactions with both water and electricity, it is going to be months and months before we even get the electricity started.
And as you said, trees, you know, you get used to seeing it. It's a lush island. It's no longer lush in terms of the trees because of all the damage. So where do you start trying to repair that?
Well, trees are pretty resilient in the regular forest. And we will have what is called a new age forest pop up pretty quick from sprouts and things. In the urban forests in all the cities, it will be partially denuded because they will not come back, cannot come back. The old trees that people remember on squares and along their streets, once they're down, it'll be very difficult to replant or have them again. But they do need to think about, once the people problems are over, we need to think about replanting and then taking care of what you've still got left. And that goes for us as well as Puerto Rico.
Right. Where do we stand right now in the process? A lot of the trees have obviously been removed. There are some that are still needing to be cut up and removed. Not a do-it-yourself project. You want to let people know.
The first pass we've taken care of for the most part. It's the second and third pass that you need professional help with, because in storm damage, things are twisted, bent. There's potential energy there ready to jump out at you. Some trees that are down are not actually broken. They're hinged. They'll sit back up if you take enough weight off of them. This is something that when you take your dog to the veterinarian, that's an important thing. You need to bring an arborist to your trees. They have value. They have real value in their landscapes for businesses. For parking lots, for all these places that we have a green infrastructure, they need some care. And we have research that shows the unmanaged tree really went down, broke apart, had more problems than the managed tree. So just a little bit of effort in tree healthcare can minimize some of the future storm damage that's coming at us.
Professor Stewart, if you could once again introduce yourself again to our listeners who may not have caught our introductions in the beginning.
Yes, I'm Alan Stewart. I'm a weather and climate psychologist from the College of Education.
And when you hear how the damage in Puerto Rico, just so devastating, and even here, if our landscape changes with storms that significantly change what we're used to and the comfort we might get from our familiar surroundings, mm-hmm. you know, how do people adjust? How do you adjust when it's a catastrophe and it literally does not look like the place you saw just a day or two before?
Well, it can be psychologically traumatizing. People experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder or acute stress disorder, which is a sort of a shorter-term a variant of trauma, is all possible following natural disasters like hurricanes, the earthquakes that recently occurred in Mexico, for example. Our lives are embodied in the stuff that we have in our homes, and from the standpoint of flooding, as what occurred with Harvey in Houston in western Louisiana, it's merciless, like fire. It invades, it destroys, similarly, high winds for us. Fortunately, Irma was more of a wind event than a precipitation and wind event. Trees that fall on homes suddenly. Can be traumatizing, especially if not only the suddenness, the scariness of a fallen tree or the rising of floodwaters from a river, but the coupled with the trauma, the loss of important belongings in one's home, loss of ability to work. You know, one of the ways that we sort of are who we are emotionally and cognitively and behaviorally is how we contribute to the economy. And when the storm not only disrupts home places, but also places of business, workplaces, the ability to get back into routine, which can be somewhat therapeutic, can be disrupted. Or in some cases, as perhaps sadly the case in Puerto Rico, the ability to work because the businesses are gone, you know, it's removed. And so those added layers, the trauma of the physical impacts of the storm itself, the secondary losses of home and belongings, and then loss of infrastructure that sort of contributes to a sense of normalcy, all can add to the kind of the allostatic or the cumulative burden that the weather provides to people. And it's not surprising, after Katrina, the lower ninth district flooded, a lot of people just didn't move back. And I was hearing people in the aftermath of Harvey say some similar things about Houston. I'm just not going to go back. And so saying goodbye to the place of the home is true as well. And then the points that we were making earlier about people leaving Puerto Rico, I've heard a lot about people leaving that island, probably not to return except to visit. So that's a huge psychological burden, and multifaceted one at that.
Professor Dorfman, if you can kind of reintroduce yourself as well, and then kind of address for us what sort of assistance is available, I guess, for the average homeowner and for maybe small businesses in the wake of a storm's destruction.
Sure. I'm Jeff Dorfman. I'm a professor of economics in the College of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences. There is aid for both people and businesses that suffered storm damage or disruption, although it is not necessarily what people always think it is. A lot of people think the government will come and pay to rebuild your house or restore your business, and that is not actually what they do. You'll get some short-term money if you're displaced, but after that, what you actually get, both for people and businesses, is a Small Business Administration loan. So they will give you a loan to help rebuild your business or your house, but you will have to pay it back.
That's a key.
Yeah, there's no, the only free money from the government after these storms is a little bit of money to help you pay for food and hotels for a few weeks afterwards. Now, the Small Business Administration does help, and those loans are certainly helpful. But the government's not handing out money. They're just helping you get back on your feet.
Remember, that's a loan. And Professor Coder, if you can introduce yourself again, please.
I'm Kim Coder. I'm with the Wornell School of Forestry and Natural Resources here on campus.
And tell me what people can do to prepare before the storm when you're talking about your trees. What should they look for or be aware of?
Well, one of the things is they need to look for. They have to pay attention to their trees, because when you have something that's 90 feet tall and weighs 50,000 pounds wet, that is a significant thing that if it comes down in your car, your house, or your swing set. So people need to pay attention to their trees. They don't need to be afraid of them, but everything out there has some risk in the landscape. And they need to do a little careful evaluation of, was this tree damaged? Do I see longitudinal faults, cracks? Is there hanging deadwood in the top of it? All of those things can come to haunt you later on. If you see changes in your the grass underneath the trees, if you see the root plate starting to tip a little bit, you see arc cracks or little indentations in your grass, that means something is changing underneath the soil surface. So we need to watch, and through that care and being good stewards on our landscapes and in our communities, we can minimize some of that damage to come.
All right. Well, thank you. I'll let you have the last word today. I want to thank my guests, Professors Jeffrey Dorfman, Kim Coder, and Alan Stewart. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for a podcast. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of the station. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.